This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
Denton, what do you have news-wise? By the way, I really enjoyed that. Denton booked Mike Stanton for me. And, of course, I know who Mike Stanton is. But I will tell you that before the show started, I said, who are we having on again? He said, Mike Stanton. We're going to do some baseball. Because I told Denton, let's do a little baseball this week because we are in the championship series round. And then, you know, we get wrapped up into the football conversation, and then I realized, oh, it's that Mike Stanton. The dude's been around forever.
Ever. He's really good.
I mean, I think one of the most clutch moments, you know, in terms of a pop culture moment for a president. All right, I'm not talking about anything political. I'm not talking about any of the decisions on policies or handling a foreign crisis situation. I'm talking about George Bush, Game 3 of the 2001 World Series, walking out there in front of an absolute zany, electric Yankee Stadium crowd and just calmly delivering a first pitch right down the pipe. That moment, I don't care what party you're affiliated with, that is a hair stand up on the back of your neck moment. Was for me. He was great. All right, what else? What do you got?
All right, so we kind of broke this news at the beginning of the show, but in case anybody missed it, Devontae Adams traded to the New York Jets earlier this morning. He's reuniting with Aaron Rodgers. The Jets giving up a third-round pick that could become a second and will pay all of the salary left on Devontae Adams' contract. The Raiders are on the hook for none of that.
Yeah, I mean, look, do you know that Aaron Rodgers, the Jets lead the league in most drop passes in the league through 6 weeks in the season? Four or five of them were last night, and they were big ones. You know, Garrett Wilson is an incredible route runner. I really like watching Garrett Wilson play. Aaron Rodgers stuck it right between his numbers on a huge third and goal in the end zone, and he took a big pop. He did, and he didn't hold on to the ball. You got to hold on to the ball in that spot. If you're an elite receiver, that ball's right there. You know you're going to take a shot. You've got a converging safety. Taylor Rapp, by the way, hell of a safety, hell of a game last night for Buffalo. You got to make that grab. He made some incredible throws last night. I don't think the problem is Aaron Rodgers right now with the Jets. I thought they were much better offensively. You add a guy that's not going to drop balls, is going to make it easier. How are they going to cover all those dudes? Seriously. Lazard was great last night. Breece Hall was great last night. He rushed for 113 yards on 18 carries. I don't think the story's been written on the Jets this year. If I'm a Jet fan, I'm thrilled with that. Because really, at this point, you're not building something. You know, you're not trying to, you know, build a team that, you know, is competitive this year and then gets better next year, and then that's you're all in. You're all in. You know, like Denver was with Peyton Manning, it worked. like Tampa was with Tom Brady, it worked. You know, I've heard people say this never works. Well, it has worked. It has worked before. And, you know, giving up future assets when you're the Jets and you haven't been to the playoffs since how long? It's been like 14 years since they've been to the postseason, I think.
It's been a long, long time. Something I think Brett Favre was the quarterback.
No, Sanchez was the quarterback. Right? Or maybe you might be right. Favre didn't go to the playoffs with the Jets, did he?
Then maybe it was. Oh, he might have. He might have.
They got to an AFC title game with Sanchez.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure they did. I mean, their defense was dominant.
They got to two with Sanchez. You're right. Brett Favre had. They were 9-7, but they did not make the playoffs.
Right. Favre made it to the NFC title game with the Vikings when they lost that game to the Saints. You know, the Bounty Gate Saints.
Right.
Greg Williams Saints. there's absolutely no downside if you're the Jets to doing this. You give up a pick. You're paying the rest of his salary. You're all in. And at 2-4 in that division, you know, you're not out of it. You're not out of it in the AFC just in general. So, I mean, if I were, look, we've been the Jets for a long period of time here, and that's one of the reasons I always advocated for swinging big at the quarterback position specifically, because you were never going to actually have, you know, a plan with the old ownership of, you know, building it slowly and smartly and drafting well and the whole thing. That was never going to happen. So you had to, you know, you had to hit on a quarterback, and you know, you had to keep going for it. I love the trade for the Jets. Love the trade. I don't care how it gets graded out by anybody in analytics personally, because this is an all-in team, the Jets, and they just added one of the top five wide receivers in the game to go with an up-and-coming elite receiver as well, and a really, really good back, and a quarterback that, despite the results in terms of record, has not played poorly. Yeah, he threw an interception at the end of the Minnesota game. Painful. He threw an interception last night. It was actually the throw he had to make last night. His field goal kicker missed a kick at the end of the game to beat the Broncos, and his field goal kicker missed two kicks last night that probably would have been the difference in the game. So I'm not off of the Jets yet in 2024. What about you? Curious as to what you think.
No, I'm not off. I mean, at 2-4 with the week schedule they have on the back end after that Houston game in a couple of weeks, and you have Aaron Rodgers, I just definitely think there are no excuses anymore. Not that they've been making excuses, but you fired Robert Saleh, you switched up the play calling, and you went and got Aaron Rodgers' best friend to play wide receiver. I know you're 2-4, it's not optimal, but if you don't end up making the postseason, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is going to have to do something that scares him, and that's take a little bit of accountability. Remember, this time last week, he said he had no control over anything that happened in the Jets organization, and now they just went and got his best friend. So it's a lot of pressure on him.
It's easy to jump on Aaron Rodgers because
it's also very fun.
Because he was in Egypt during mandatory minicamp, you know, that's not necessarily what a leader does. And by the way, I think that's justified criticism. You know, remember when Tom Brady got to Tampa, it was during a pandemic, and he basically broke the law to get everybody together in a park to start throwing with his wide receivers. So a different mindset in the two players. But I've watched, you know, we've watched a bunch of the Jet games. You know, we've had a chance to watch the last two, the Vikings game and the Bills game. We saw the opener. I don't think this has been an Aaron Rodgers issue so far. I think he looks like Aaron Rodgers slinging it. He took a beating last night, by the way. Kept getting up, kept delivering dimes. You had 4 to 5 drop passes. One of them for a touchdown. You had a phantom holding call, you know, call back a touchdown run. You had your field goal kicker miss two chip shots. Yes, it was windy. And yes, Buffalo's kicker missed a kick and an extra point as well. The defense gave up to rookie Ray Davis last night like 5 yards a carry in the game. They gave up 150 yards rushing in the game. You know, it may be that the Jets don't get there because of their defense. which is a crazy thing because they were such a good defense last year. But defense has the, you know, variance is much greater year to year with defense than it is with offense. It's last year's dominance isn't necessarily predictive for the following year when it comes to that side of the ball. They're good. They're not dominant right now. All right, what else?
Well, speaking of the Jets, and this is kind of combining a story, we heard this morning John Allen was on with the Junkies. He said he is going to have season-ending surgery on his pec today.
Okay.
But then along with that, we get news from the Jets that Hassan Reddick is now able to seek a trade. They've given him permission. He had let go of his previous agent. He hired Drew Rosenhaus. Drew Rosenhaus, big name in the agency game. So it looks like Hassan Reddick could potentially be on the move in a matter of days, weeks, who knows.
Do you want him?
Not really. I mean, if you're in the position where you're going to trade for a guy, like, he better have a really good explanation as to why he did not play for the Jets. If it's just about the money,
well,
I can understand that.
About the money.
I can understand that from a personal standpoint, but you also cost yourself $9 million. And you were doing this whole thing in Japan.
Where, yeah, this is one of those situations where, you know, as an NFL fan and not an NFL, you know, executive or part of a front office, you can say the player's really good. He would clearly add value as a pass rusher to a defense that doesn't have, you know, a legitimate pass rusher right now. And it's a team, by the way, on the rise. It's a team that has a chance this year to win double-digit regular season games and host playoff games, plural. A chance. But you don't know anything about him. And when you have this long of a holdout and he's lost this much money and it's over a contract and the team that he was joining that he got traded to was a team that had Super Bowl aspirations or certainly, you know, deep into the playoffs, you know, contending aspirations. There's things about this person you don't know, you have to know. Because right now what Washington is building, I'm all in for 24, first and foremost, but not at the expense of, you know, putting at jeopardy the future with kind of the foundation and the culture that they're creating. And I just don't know enough about Hassan Reddick to say that he'd be a good fit or a bad fit.
He's been a good player in the league.
He's a good player.
There's no doubt about that. But
you
I do
get better
always
pass rush with him on the field.
100%. But I do always question, like, how often does it work when you hold out massive amounts into the season? Like, we've seen guys hold out for a game or two, they come back, they're rusty, and they get it together. But once you start holding out more than four or five games into the season, potentially the entire season, you never really end up being the same player prior to the holdout, for whatever the reason is. So that would be a red flag in this scenario as well, that he might have missed so much football to where he'll still be good, he'll still make the team better, certainly, but if you're going to have to trade for him and then pay him, is that all going to be justified based on the performance you actually get from him?
Yeah. You know, there's also just the idea of, you know, scheme fit. You know, would it be the right scheme fit, you know, with Joe Witt and Dan Quinn's system? I mean, you know, Philly's been a base 3-4 team. Not that everybody's in base all the time. He's been, you know, an outside. He's been a pass rushing linebacker, 2-point stance pass rusher, not a 3-point stance guy. And I'm not saying that that's the position they'd put him in. They'd probably have him at linebacker anyway, as a pass rusher in a 2-point stance. But, you know, those are the things too that they know more than we know. But in terms of a talent and a go get the quarterback guy, he's up there. He's not the best. He's not the elite of the elites right now, but he's been up there in terms of sack totals at times over the last few years. Where did he finish? He had his best year in 22 and the 22 regular season. Where did he finish in sacks that year? He finished second in the league behind Bosa.
He had 16. That was a crazy year.
Yeah. Tied for second with Myles Garrett behind Bosa. I mean, look, if you told me you get your choice of any pass rusher in the league, Reddick's not my first choice by a long shot. I'm going in order. Watt. I think Watt's my number one. Garrett's my number two. Bosa healthy is awfully, awfully tough to turn down. You know, interior-wise, right now you'd think about Dexter Lawrence, you'd think about Chris Jones.
Mm-hmm.
How about Max Crosby?
Yeah, I was going to say, Crosby be top. Probably, if you're just talking edge guys, the lowest he would be on that list is 7. Maybe that 5-6 range, assuming that Bosa is healthy. And then you kind of get like, I don't know how I'd feel. Micah Parsons coming to this defense particularly would excite me just because we know he's had success with these two guys that are leading the defense and Quinn and Joe Witt Jr. But I would say at the very lowest, Max Crosby's like 7 on that list, which is pretty good.
You know who I was impressed with, and I made a note of this, and you mentioned this. I think you were the one that mentioned this to me. You know who played really well, I thought, for Baltimore was Kyle Van Noy.
Kyle Van Noy, yeah. They put him in a really good spot.
He's in a really good spot. Who's leading the league in sacks right now? Is it Dexter Lawrence?
It's how many is Lawrence sacks? Kyle Van Noy had 6 coming into this week.
Aiden Hutchinson out for the year leads the league in sacks right now with 7.5. Obviously, that won't be the case. Lawrence is second. He's tied with Will McDonald. I had no idea that Will McDonald, second year. You know, this was the guy they picked, the Jets picked out of Iowa State in the 23 draft, which was a bit of a surprise pick, remember? By the way, that was the pick right in that draft before Dotson. Before Forbes. Where was Forbes picked? 16?
He was
17?
He was 16, and then,
McDonald that went right before Forbes.
And Gonzalez was right after. What a sandwich
Gonzalez
that
was
is.
Right after.
Yeah. I'm also bummed about the Aiden Hutchinson thing because I'm pretty sure one of my preseason bold predictions was that guy was going to have like 14 sacks.
Oh, he's so good. When's the last time a true D tackle led the league in sacks?
Aaron Donald might have done it once.
I was going to say, it's got to be Donald.
Yeah, he might have done it once. Because remember, he went on that stretch where I was like, they might want to just name the Defensive Player of the Year award after him. He won it like 3 years in a row.
Yeah. All right, what else do you have?
Did you ever see... Yeah, Aaron Donald had 20.5 in 2018.
Right.
Did you ever end up actually seeing The Joker? That came out when I was in Maine, so we never talked about it.
It's on my list, but let me just tell you, everybody that I know and I trust who has seen it said...
Killing it.
Don't bother.
It's projected to lose in the neighborhood of $150 to $200 million. And it's going to be on, I believe, HBO Max on digital at the end of the month. So, like, save the $20 or $25 that it costs now to go see a damn movie.
Yeah, I mean, a friend of mine who went and saw it in the theater said, look, Joaquin Phoenix is brilliant in everything he does, but this is not a good movie. This was a massive disappointment. Did you know that yesterday was the 30-year anniversary of Pulp Fiction debuting?
I did not know that.
Yeah. It debuted October 14th, 1994. I saw it on like the second night or third night. I'll never forget. A friend of mine who actually lives in California was in town because his parents were here, and we loved Reservoir Dogs. And, you know, we couldn't wait for the next Tarantino movie to come out. And we went and saw it, and I just remember saying, I remember my reaction. I'm like, that's either the greatest movie that I've ever seen, or I'm going to need a few days to figure it out. Because remember, you know, it's all these scenes going forward, you're going back. It's the whole Tarantino thing, but just without a doubt, a movie that has stood the test of time, as many of his movies have. I mean, I'm sure we've done this before. I actually think that Inglourious Basterds is my favorite Tarantino movie, followed now by Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and then I go Pulp Fiction next. But at the time, what an absolute brilliant movie. Tell me you've watched Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction I have watched. You would not be happy with the lack of Tarantino movies that I've seen, but I have seen Pulp Fiction.
Okay. Great movie. God, Uma Thurman. Woo! She was so awesome. And it was really, you know, it was the return of John Travolta. You know, Tarantino just resurrected his career. You know, he hadn't really done anything for a while until Pulp. And It was quite the revelation in the moment, because you're like, oh, I remember John Travolta from that, you know, Grease movie, and from Saturday Night Fever, and from Welcome Back, Kotter, for those of you who remember, you know, our kids of the 70s, like I was. But Pulp Fiction's definitely up there. Definitely up there is one of the, you know, one of the great movies that has stood the test of time. 30 years, amazing. I'll never forget it. And I'm pretty sure I saw it at the Uptown on Connecticut Avenue, which somebody told me recently, is the Uptown closed? And I need to look that up.
I have no idea.
Well, the Uptown is a legendary DC theater on Connecticut Avenue. So it is closed, but I thought that they were making plans to reopen it at some point. I could be wrong.
I see something in the Washingtonian that said it's coming back.
What'd you say?
Something in the Washingtonian published
11
days ago says it's coming back.
Yeah. First movie I ever saw at the Uptown was Star Wars. All right, what else?
So you were a Star Wars guy. Final thing.
No, I wasn't. I was not a Star Wars guy, but I saw the original.
I mean, Darth Vader's epic.
When they were 11 years old in the 70s.
I'll watch it now. I'm nearly 30 in 2024. All right, final thing here. First AP Top 25 in men's college basketball, the preseason poll released yesterday. Mm-hmm. No Maryland. In fact, no local representation from, I mean, even if you really stretch the confines of the DMV, no representation at all by the DMV outside of Maryland receiving one singular vote in the top 25.
I saw that. Yeah,
I mean, VCU,
I'm surprised. I mean, I'm not surprised now because I follow this very closely. So I've kind of known for the last month or two that this was coming, because when you go back to spring post the national championship game, the Connecticut-Purdue final, you know, and they do the all too earlies, and then they update that in June and then July, and Maryland had a good recruiting class. They signed Derek Queen, a 5-star. They did pretty well in the portal. And for a while there, they were showing up in a lot of the all too early top 25 preseason for the upcoming year. But, you know, teams keep changing, they keep adding, and, you know, before you knew it, they were outside looking in, and, you know, the poll comes out yesterday. I thought for sure they'd be, you know, up high in the other teams receiving votes. They got one vote for the AP Top 25. But you know what? College hoops each year now, because of all of the change, is really hard to predict. What's interesting, Denton, now that I'm a Big Ten guy, is just, you know, how deficient the Big Ten is in the top 25. Anyway, the first ranked Big Ten team is Purdue at 14. They're at 14. Indiana's at 17. And then I think that's it, unless Rutgers is in there. Is Rutgers in the top 25?
Well, you're missing Rutgers, and you're missing the pride of the Big Ten, UCLA.
Oh, right. I forgot. My fault.
So they got four in there, but that's a
very low amount.
What about
Illinois? Where's Illinois on the others receiving votes?
They are the top others receiving votes. They got 92.
Okay.
Michigan State, Michigan in there.
So Rutgers is ranked in UCLA. So it's Rutgers, UCLA, Indiana, and Purdue are the only Big Ten teams ranked?
Yes. Where like half of the Big 12, it feels like, is ranked.
Hunter Dickinson, this is year what for him in college basketball? For number one Kansas?
Four, I think. Three or four. This is his second year
at
Kansas.
What's he making a year in NIL? $4 million? Is it $4 million a year?
I think it's $4 million a year. I don't know if he's doing his podcast this year, though. I don't know if that went well for them.
Did he do a podcast?
He did, and he constantly put his foot in his mouth last year. So I think Bill Self may have said, hey, man, no more podcast. Maybe he's still doing it, though. I never listened to Hunter Dickinson's podcast. I would just routinely, every like Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever it's published, see what crazy thing that he said that went viral.
Terps have a very interesting schedule. For those of you, and I know a lot of you listening are Terp people, because I get that all the time from all of you. Like, talk more about the Terps on the show. Yeah, I'd like to, but, you know, you got to go where the people are. You know what I'm saying? And right now, the people aren't really where Maryland football or even Maryland basketball is right now. But they have an early season schedule where they play Marquette at home November 15th. They play Villanova up in Jersey. They play Syracuse. Those three teams are on their non-con schedule. The Syracuse game's at home. The Villanova game's in Jersey, and the Marquette game is at home. And it's next year where they begin their home-and-home with Georgetown and with UVA. They start next year with Georgetown and UVA as regulars in home-and-homes. That'll be good for them. I'll tell you what, I did look at their schedule. They got a lot of Sunday games during NFL Sundays and playoff Sundays. That's, you know.
Yuck.
Can't do that. Like, I'm looking, their first, they play Villanova Sunday at 1 o'clock in November. Come on, man. The TV controls this. I'm not blaming Maryland. TV controls it. They play a game Sunday, December 18th at, 14th-ranked Purdue, right in the middle of an NFL Sunday. They play during Saturday, December 21st. Remember, is that college football triple header plus an NFL doubleheader. They play Syracuse at home. Then once they get into January, they play NFL Sundays, NFL Saturdays. It's just you got to, from a schedule standpoint, when it comes to sports that aren't the NFL, you got to try to schedule around conflicts with your local NFL teams. In Maryland's case, they got two of them, Baltimore and Washington, and just with the NFL in general. Hard to do because TV dictates and you're not going to turn down that money. Understood. But in terms of the best opportunity to get the crowds out there, when you've got, right, like this year, the Ravens and Washington both will be playing meaningful games in December, January likely, and that'll hurt Maryland's attendance for some of these games where they're playing potentially on a Saturday when the Ravens or Washington's playing, or on a Sunday when either one of those teams are playing. All right, anything else?
I think we should talk about Maryland football coming up next.
All due respect to all of my people out there, we want listeners. That's not that would not be really what a good producer would suggest I do. But we will talk some college football. Denton's got his college football recap. We had incredible games on Saturday. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts. equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Pick up your book bags. Grab your notebooks. It's time to go on campus with Denton.
Hey, give me my theme music.
All right, Denton, before you get started with your college football weekend recap, I do want to say that, yeah, I did watch Maryland lose to Northwestern on Friday night, 37-10. It was every bit of a 37-10 game, to be honest with you. There wasn't much doubt. Maryland had, in their previous loss, they had actually won the turnover battle against Indiana 4-0. And lost by 14. They actually turned it over themselves four times in the game, and the score ended up what it should have ended up because of that, 37-10. The only thing I will just say to all of you that have, you know, buried me with tweets Friday night and Saturday about the future of Mike Locksley and what you think Maryland football should be. Maryland football was essentially in the wilderness with no direction at all after Ralph Regan left. We went through all those coaches. We went through a tragic death, the Jordan McNair situation. Mike Locksley has brought, you know, competitiveness back to Maryland football. They've won three straight bowl games. They've won eight games twice. They've won seven another time in a brutal Big Ten East, which is what they've been in until this year, where it's not. Yes, I was expecting better this year, even though they changed quarterbacks, even though Leah's career was over. But if you think Mike Locksley is going to get fired or that's your desire, two things. One, A, I don't think he deserves it. I'm not sure what you think you are guaranteed of that is going to be a lot better than, you know, 23 wins in 2 years, which is a hell of a lot more than anything else they've produced since Ralph in three straight bowl games. But B, it's an impossibility. They gave him an amendment to his contract before the 23 season. He's getting paid over $6 million a year. And because he won eight games last year, it added another year to his contract. He's under contract through 2028. This school is not in position to buy out that contract. It ain't happening. But it is a disappointing year. No doubt. They were a double-digit favorite over Northwestern. They got their ass kicked. They were, with a lot of people thinking they could win that game. They really weren't that competitive in the game. I mean, when you win the turnover battle by four, and you get beat by 14, that doesn't speak well to what you are. Going back to the Michigan State game, the penalties, especially the penalty on the field goal at the end of the half, you know, it's not looking like a good season. And guess who's coming to town? The Trojans. Nothing says Big Ten football like USC in College Park Sunday. By the way, I think I'll be there on Sunday because there's, well, I mean, it's USC coming to College Park. That is a unique first-time occurrence. By the way, then they play at Minnesota. Then they're at Oregon, and they still have Iowa and Penn State on the schedule. So this likely not going to be a bowl season. But I'm still behind you out there, Coach. He's got a big-time recruiting class coming in next year. We'll see. All right. Tell us about what was a dramatic college football Saturday.
So much drama. The big game, though, was Oregon-Ohio State, and it lived up to it. Yeah, I love when we have big games that live up to the hype. Alabama and Georgia did earlier this year, and this week it was Ohio State and Oregon. It featured, honestly, Kevin, I mean, this is a dangerous game because, if anything, it gave Dan Lanning a boatload of confidence in some of what I call his aggressive behavior, right? Because he is he's kind of out there. It's creative aggressiveness. And he took a 12-man penalty that really benefited Ohio, or benefited Oregon late in the game, which we'll get into in a second. But for the second week in a row, we saw a quarterback strikeout looking. Will Howard runs when he needs to throw the ball, slides, and time expires on Ohio State. That was not a smart move from Will Howard, but for Dan Lanning in Oregon, this is a massive win. For a guy that was said couldn't win big games, I mean, we know what happened last year with Washington. You and I both got kind of wrecked by that twice. I mean, I was on Oregon heavy in the Pac-12 championship game when they were 9.5-point favorites in the rematch and they lost again. But giving him a little bit of confidence with the team they have here, I mean, the Big Ten needs to watch out. This Oregon team is very, very legit. That was a fun one to main event the weekend.
Okay, we kind of went through when Stan called in the late game, intentional 12 men on the field to, you know, burn some clock on a play where they were going to, you know, not get burned for a play that would get them in field goal range. I think that there was a lot that made sense about that. One of the reasons being, it was a kicker that didn't necessarily have the length to kick a 55, 56-yarder, et cetera. And then Will Howard made the mistake. I put that a little bit on the coaching. That's got to be a quick throw, you know, Stan from Jersey, and we talk about these scenarios all the time, said, how about a quick hitter? That's a possibility, too, especially against, you know, a defense that's kind of playing prevent to allow for, you know, the shot over the middle and the quick timeout with 6 seconds to go. But they blew it at the end. But can I just make this overarching kind of theme comment about the game? I bet Oregon +3. I never felt watching that game that I was going to win that bet. I felt the entire game that Ohio State was the better team. And part of it is, look, Oregon had just a ton of big plays. I mean, the explosive plays they had. But Denton, I don't get it with Dylan Gabriel. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of him at Oklahoma. He came up big. He had a huge run, couple of big runs. You know, they had big plays, you know, on downs in which it looked like they were about to, you know, be forced to kick a field goal or forced to punt. I never thought watching that game with the way Howard was playing, Travion Henderson, it seemed like every time Henderson touched the ball, it was, you know, a potential, you know, house call. I mean, Smith and Egbuka, the receivers are ridiculous. I still can't believe Oregon won that football game. I think if they play 10 times, Ohio State wins 8 of them.
I would probably agree with that, but I would also point in the direction of, I don't know if that makes Ohio State a better team, but they're certainly more talented. They're the most talented roster in college football, with the exception of the quarterback. And that's mostly because there's really not a lot of great quarterbacks.
I like Will Howard. What's wrong with Will Howard?
I think he's
fine. He's a hell of a lot better than Kyle McCord.
I think he's definitely better than Kyle McCord, but he's not like C.J. Stroud. And like, I know the perception of C.J. Stroud is a little different now because he's had immediate success in the NFL, but he's like a really, really good to great quarterback in college.
He's a big, strong dude, man. He's bigger and stronger than I even remembered at K-State. K-State, you know, you and I watch a lot of college football. K-State always seems to have the quarterback that kind of looks like he was a wide receiver at some point, and they turned him into a quarterback, and he's dual threat and effective, no doubt. I always thought Howard was going to be better than McCord. I'm looking up his numbers right now. He's throwing at a 73.3% clip. He's thrown for 1,574 yards in half the season, 14 touchdowns, 3 picks. He's only been sacked 3 times. How many yards has he rushed for? Oh, not as many as I would have thought. Well, but, you know.
Well, they don't need to. Two great running backs. And Quinshon Judkinson played great this weekend. But that just goes to the point where they are just loaded with talent. I mean, Will Howard will learn from that mistake,
When's the Penn State game in Happy Valley?
It's 2 or 3 weekends from now, 2 weekends. November 11th. So it's their second to next game. They got a bye week this week. They got Nebraska. Then they get Penn State the very beginning of November.
And they play Michigan in Columbus this year. And not that I'm worried about. They're going to crush Michigan this year.
Well, you know what's going to be an interesting game is that
game. Who else
game.
Do they have?
They have Indiana right before Michigan. So that could be a potential. I mean, you talk about a trap game if Indiana's still playing well because you're so focused on Michigan. Which,
well, it won't be a trap game if Indiana's still playing at the level that they're playing at. They won't overlook them.
They shouldn't, but Ryan Day knows that it's Michigan. Like, he needs to beat Michigan this year. If he loses to this Michigan team, I don't care what happens the rest of the way. Like, they're going to be in some serious – he's going to be in some serious trouble. You have to beat Michigan.
I mean, look, they haven't – you know, I think they look – I think they look really good. And the entire game, I'm like, this is the wrong frickin' side because they can't stop them. They're not going to stop them. And I don't trust Dylan Gabriel, but credit to him. You know, he kept delivering some of these big explosive plays and they won a game. What does Oregon have the rest of the way? Do they play Indiana? No. Do they play USC? No. They got Maryland.
They got Maryland. Watch out.
Here it is. At Purdue this week, Illinois, Michigan on the road in the Big House, Maryland at home, at Wisconsin, Washington at home. Boy, that will be a big-time revenge game, too.
Yeah. By the way, the NCAA is looking into a potential punishment for that 12-man thing.
I'm sorry?
The NCAA, according to Ross Dellinger, is looking into a potential punishment for the 12-man thing that Dan Lanning
bought. Why? Is there a rule against it, doing it intentionally?
No. It's one of those things where they're so stupid.
That's a situation that the rules allow you to do, unless they're saying you can't do it. It's just like, you know, the intentional defensive hold or PI. When a team, like I think the Ravens were the first team to do this, and we probably have to go back 10 years, maybe longer, where, you know, John Harbaugh decided, you know, with very little time left on the clock, you know, call it, you know, 15 seconds. We and the teams in a first and goal situation against you, we're going to hold, we're going to absolutely give up the, you know, half the distance to the goal on a defensive hold and an automatic first down to burn clock. It's a brilliant strategy. The problem is the NFL now doesn't allow that on consecutive plays. So if it's consecutive plays, they put the time back on the clock. Because that's what Lanning was doing in college football. If they're gonna fix that, all you got to do is, if you get a penalty like that, the clock goes back to where it was before the play. You just have to put the time back. The time's the most valuable thing there for Ohio State, and that was the goal, was to burn the clock so that they essentially had one play to get into field goal range. He gave up the 5 yards because the 5 yards wasn't going to give up field goal range because the guy couldn't kick, apparently, a 55 or 56-yard field goal. Ohio State still blew the next play. You got to get a quick, short, over-the-middle timeout, you know, 6-7-yard gain, or, you know, as Stan suggested, maybe it's a quick QB draw or a quick hitter against, you know, prevent defense or a dime defense, and you try to get 5-6 yards and call timeout. You can't have your quarterback, you know, running, you know, and then trying to get a lot of yards and then going into a slide as the clock runs out. That was terrible.
It was really, really bad. Real quickly here, because we're kind of short on time, how about the worst loss in years, I would say, for Lane Kiffin? Now a two-loss Ole Miss team because of some, like, voodoo at the end. I'll tell you what. I mean, you know this. I know this. If you're a fan of college, you know this. Death Valley at night is just a different beast. Ole Miss loses their second game of the season. I don't think Lane Kiffin's seat is hot necessarily, but this is certainly a disappointing start to the year.
What a thrilling game this was. This was a great football game. And, you know, Garrett Nussmeier's numbers are not going to look good. I'm pulling them up right now because I want to see what they were. But this dude, there's a guy he reminds me of. He was 22 of 51.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he was well below 50% completion percentage. However, the 22 completions were for 337 yards and 3 touchdowns. He has the Rex Grossman mindset. He does. He just is aggressive as hell, and he'll drop back. He never looks to run, which I think is hurting LSU right now. But he will throw a bomb. He'll throw it into, you know, heavy traffic and trust his receivers. And by the way, you know, in that game, at one point, they actually lost Kyron Lacy. He's the next one, by the way, from LSU in terms of receivers. They lost him. Jackson Dart does not see it. Denton, he holds it too long. He doesn't see it. Great runner, great playmaker, good deep ball thrower. But wow, disappointment for Ole Miss, who saw a playoff before the season started. But you got to say that LSU now is in the hunt. Although I'm going to tell you right now, they'll go to Arkansas and lose this weekend. That'll be an absolute trap game. Arkansas is capable. They beat Tennessee. Is that line short? I'm going to bet that that is a super short line. Haven't looked at it yet.
Yeah, it's LSU is 2.5-point favorites over 4-2 Arkansas.
Arkansas for the limit.
Yeah, the team that they play that's really the sneaky team in the SEC is the week after with Texas A&M.
The way A&M's playing right now.
Yeah, their defense is insane.
So good, their defense. And didn't we look at their whole deal? Like, they should, you know, other than the Texas game Thanksgiving weekend, that they will likely win every other game until then.
I mean, assuming
play
LSU.
Where is the game? Death Valley or College
Station? That's at College Station. Both LSU and Texas are at College Station.
Hell of a game, the LSU-Ole Miss game. I mean, a big-time game. That touchdown throw in overtime from Nussmeier to Lacy was awesome. You just had both of those games going on simultaneously. It was great. We didn't even talk about Penn State USC. What is Lincoln Riley doing at the end of regulation? Not using timeouts when he's at midfield in a tie game.
That dude can
coach quarterbacks. Somebody said Lincoln Riley's been terrible at clock management going back to his days, you know, wherever he's been, Oklahoma or wherever he's been. That was an embarrassment.
He's been.
What are you doing?
He's been terrible at everything except quarterbacks.
And you didn't use one timeout, and you go to overtime.
It was bad. He can coach quarterbacks. That's about it. Defense is always bad. Clock management always bad.
They were. I want to see the field position. They were at the Penn State. They were at the 50-yard line with 48 seconds to go. Okay, they called their first timeout with 5 seconds to go. To get the field goal, they called it on defense. I'm sorry, that was after the Miller-Moss interception. That's the thing. I mean, you call timeouts early enough, you can continue to run the football. You can continue to run your regular offense. That made no sense to me at all. That was a really good football game, and by the way, a really big win for James Franklin. And Aller came up big in that second half after they were, you know, after they were down. What were they down? 20-6, was it? Something
like 14.
That? Yeah. All right, we'll finish up with a few things. I promise just a quick word on some of the things I saw from Jaden Daniels after watching the All-22. We'll get to that next. So I was more impressed after watching the Jaden Daniel performance from Sunday with the benefit of seeing the whole field in the All-22. Not that I'm a film expert by any stretch of the imagination, but as football fans, we can see, oh, he missed that guy wide open, or he shouldn't have thrown it there. The guy was, you know, sitting there. He made so many really good throws. I did want to mention before I get to maybe my two favorite throws on the day, what I emphasized yesterday about sort of just that next level, you know, savvy, high IQ quarterbacking at the end of the first half when the clock was rolling. I think Quinn should have called a timeout at 30 seconds to go. I think he made a mistake there. But to ground the ball essentially at Eckler's feet on a check down, which wasn't going to go anywhere, that was high level sort of understanding score, timeouts, clock, et cetera. And Quinn said yesterday when he was asked about his performance, he said that was maybe the most impressive thing. And he made the comment, he said, he's really dialed in. He's thinking about the ball and thinking about decision making. And that's not just throwing it well, that's playing quarterback well. I thought that was really, really high praise for a guy that's played six games. So real quickly, there's a 3rd and 6 on the 4th drive of the game. This is a drive, they got to have it. You know, they're down 10-3 second quarter, and from the pocket, as he was asked to do all day long, drops back, hits that back step. He's got Terry in man coverage, but the ball it's got to be early. It's got to be low and outside because Terry's covered well. There wasn't a lot of separation at times with Terry and defenders on Sunday, but God, does he catch a contested ball well. And it's just a great throw. Great catch, too. Ball's low. It's to the outside, and they move the sticks. They end up scoring a game-tying touchdown on that drive. And then the other one that I really loved was the throw to Zach Ertz on 3rd and 10 on the drive that made it 27-20 when he converted the 4th and goal. Just watch. Look, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 6. These are the situations where, you know, if you're ever going to be truly elite, truly great, you have to deliver on those plays. All the other stuff, you know, play action, boot, zone read, scrambles. But the bottom line in the NFL, even today, when you get to close games that matter, you're going to have to deliver on 3rd and medium and 3rd and long from the pocket. And he did that over and over again. And that 3rd and 10, that bullet across the middle to Ertz before the coverage converged that got the ball down to the 1-yard line. Big time. I mean, just keep him healthy and upright. All right, that's it for the day. Back tomorrow. Chris Russell's up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole with its V-shaped stud configuration is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.